the headlines. The U.S. planning to deploy a missile destroyer and fighter jets to the UAE after it fired Patriot interceptors to repel a Yemeni missile strike on the Persian Gulf state. Turkey says dozens of its warplanes and drones have pounded the positions of Kurdish militants in northern Iraq and in Syria. And Western officials continue to make contradictory assessments about the possibility of a war between Russia and Ukraine. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is the news. Thanks for joining us. The United States growing more engaged in the war in Yemen. The Pentagon is preparing to send fifth-generation fighter jets to the United Arab Emirates in the wake of Yemeni strikes deep inside the Persian Gulf state. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin says that Washington will also deploy guided missile destroyer USS Cole to Abu Dhabi. The U.S. will continue to provide early warning intelligence to the UAE. 2 days ago, Washington also intercepted a Yemeni projectile headed for the UAE. The Yemeni army has warned that it will continue to strike the Emirates as long as it keeps targeting Yemeni people. On Monday, Yemeni armed forces targeted a number of sensitive facilities in the capital, Abu Dhabi. The UAE is part of the Saudi coalition that's been waging a bloody war in Yemen for 7 years. Hundreds of thousands of Yemenis have been killed directly from the war or indirectly from hunger and disease. We reached out to political commentator Jason Unruhe to hear his perspective on the latest warning the Yemeni army has given the United Arab Emirates. Here's what he had to tell us.
The UAE seems to be relatively good to go along with it, to give them whatever kind of support, at least political support to some degree, and I highly suspect material support in the background or whatever form that it might take, and that this, of course, would lead the Yemenis to bring the war to the UAE, as we have seen on at least one occasion. And then, you know, we're having them say that they're not afraid to strike out at basically anyone who's going to support the destruction of their country and the slaughter of their people. So maybe because I'm not really a war strategist kind of person, but it does seem like Saudi Arabia is looking for help. I mean, that at least that's how it appears to my eyes. I mean, that wasn't how it was done at the beginning, but this change has been made. So I think that it is a change to some degree, but exactly what it is probably only in the heads of the Saudi planners themselves.
The Iraqi military has condemned Turkey's deadly airstrikes against suspected Kurdish militants in northern Iraq. The military calls the Turkish infiltration into Iraqi airspace as a violation of the country's sovereignty. Separately, an Iraqi security media cell affiliated to the Prime Minister's office has criticized Ankara. It urges Turkey to respect the principle of good neighborliness and international regulations. Meanwhile, the Turkish Defense Ministry confirmed that dozens of its warplanes and drones pounded what are called bases of PKK and YPG Kurdish groups in Iraq and Syria. Those attacks left a number of people dead and injured, although the exact number of casualties remains unknown. Turkey views both groups as terrorists and has carried out numerous attacks against them. The Syrian government has not reacted to the Turkish aerial raids. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi says that Washington's policy of maximum pressure has failed to achieve its goals.
When the Americans openly acknowledge that they have failed in their maximum pressure policy, an ignominious failure, this is a victory for the Iranian nation.
Raisi said that Iran's policy of resistance has offset the U.S. pressure. Raisi made the remarks during a visit to the mausoleum of the late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, on the occasion of the 43rd anniversary of the Islamic Revolution. Back in 2018, former President Donald Trump unilaterally withdrew the U.S. from the 2015 deal between Iran and world powers and intensified a campaign of sanctions to force Tehran to negotiate a new agreement. Iran is marking the 43rd anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. The event is marked every year with a 10-day celebration period known as the 10-day dawn. Our correspondent Yusuf Jalali has been present at this year's ceremonies and has filed this report.
43 years ago this day, millions of Iranians flocked to Tehran's Mehrabad airport to welcome the late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, back to the country after 14 years of exile. The historic day was a milestone that put an end to centuries of monarchy in Iran. Ever since, Iranians have celebrated the occasion every year for 10 days. The event starts on the anniversary of Imam Khomeini's homecoming and culminates on the anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution. This period is called Dehe-i Fajr, or the 10-day dawn. As with every year, the ceremonies began with a visit by leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, to Imam Khomeini's mausoleum. The mausoleum also hosted state officials and people from all walks of life to mark the occasion.
Like every year, we gather today in this holy place to pay respect to Imam Khomeini, a man who changed the course of history in our country and established a political system that respects our beliefs as Muslims.
Today is an important day for us. We, the new generation, were not present those days, but we participate in this ceremony to learn about the personality of Imam Khomeini.
The Islamic Revolution was led by Imam Khomeini, who spent some 14 years in exile in Iraq, Turkey, and France, from where he led a swelling grassroots movement, which ultimately led to the toppling of former Iranian monarch Mohammad Reza Pahlavi. The revolution was driven by anti-imperialist sentiments, since Mohammad Reza Pahlavi was believed to be heavily dependent on Western powers, especially the U.S.
During the Shah period, other countries like the U.S. made decisions for us. Iran was a U.S. colony. They were in our country to plunder our oil and other resources.
We lost many of our beloved ones for the sake of the Islamic Republic. By celebrating the event, we seek to say no to foreign interference in our country. We still stick to those ideals, no matter how much pressure and sanctions the U.S. imposes on our nation.
Less than 2 months after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, Iranians took part in a referendum, where more than 98% of eligible voters voted yes to the Islamic Republic as a new political system.
To Iranians, the 10-day dawn is reminiscent of their struggle for independence, a legacy that they're not willing to give up on, even if it means they have to endure U.S. sanctions. Now, one of the major goals of holding such massive celebrations is to pass on these messages to new generations. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Russia denounces Britain's diplomatic approach toward Moscow as rifts between the two countries continue to widen over Ukraine.
There is always room for diplomacy, but frankly, we don't trust British diplomacy. I think in recent years, British diplomacy has shown that it is absolutely worthless in such issues. This hysteria doesn't stop. It's absolutely happening in the heads of Western politicians.
Dmitry Polyansky accused the West of exaggerating the number of Russian forces present along the country's border with Ukraine. On Tuesday, the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson, during his visit to Kiev, said the presence of Russian troops poses danger to the Ukraine. The UK is among some Western countries that claim that Russia is preparing to invade Ukraine. France, however, believes there are no indications that Russia is ready to take military action against its neighbor. The Ukrainian president has also warned that overstatements about the invasion cause panic and harm his country's economy. Well, pressure is piling up on Britain's prime minister in a leadership challenge. Now a senior conservative lawmaker is joining the chorus of critics, saying that he will submit a letter of no confidence on Boris Johnson.
But it's not the previous battles that matter. It's the domestic and international ones ahead of us that count. And the question now is for all of us, is the Prime Minister the best person to lead the party moving forward?
Tobias Elwood says the Partygate scandal is distracting the government at a time of international crisis. He urged Johnson to call a vote of confidence rather than wait for MPs to trigger the process. Elwood also admitted that the Conservative Party is slipping into a very ugly place. The British Prime Minister is under fire after the release of a partial version of an internal inquiry. The report has described a series of lockdowns, breaching parties held at Johnson's residence and government offices, as a serious failure. Johnson could be removed as the Tory leader if 54 of the 360 Conservative MPs submit letters of no confidence to the party. Earlier, we were joined by our correspondent in London, Syed Purreza. He says collecting letters of no confidence is just the beginning of a lengthy process to remove Prime Minister Boris Johnson from office.
The key question here now is whether or not enough Conservative MPs have handed in their letters of no confidence to the so-called 1922 committee of backbenchers. But the magical number is 54. Once that happens, you're looking at a no confidence vote being triggered. And when that happens, the prime minister will have to win the trust or the vote of half of the conservative MPs in parliament. That's 181. But again, he's confronted with so many crises. You're looking at the Russia-Ukraine crisis. He's trying to tough talk on Russia. He's announced policies as far as relations with the EU, trying to deflect attention from the problem that has befallen him and his government over the past couple of weeks, if not longer. This is a serious challenge.
The Eurozone's inflation hits a new record high, extending pain for consumers and piling up further pressure on the European Central Bank. According to the statistics agency, Eurostat, the cost of living in the 19-member monetary bloc soared to over 5% in January, up from the previous month. The rise has been driven by raising demand for energy, including electricity usage. The European Central Bank is holding a meeting to discuss the issue. That is while the ECB chief, Christine Lagarde, has expressed optimism, saying the inflationary pressure is transitory. Experts say, however, that the inflation has become a source of anxiety in the Eurozone. Meanwhile, Europe is also facing a threat of energy disruption amid escalating tensions between Russia and the West over Ukraine. Let's get some clarification on this. Jerome Hughes is our correspondent who joins us from Brussels. Well, Jerome, first of all, tell us about the inflation and how it's hitting the Eurozone as a whole. And also tell us if it's just about electricity and energy, or are there other reasons behind the rising inflation rate?
Yes, Kaveh, well, there are a number of contributing factors, and this is a subject that will be debated today in the European Parliament here in Brussels. And Pascal Donohue, who's the president of the Eurogroup representing the 19 finance ministers from the Eurozone, will take part in the debate. And what we've seen with previous debates from EU lawmakers, what they say, many of them, is that the powers that be simply don't get it. We're hearing positive sort of undertones from the European Commission, from the European Central Bank, from national governments in relation to, you know, inflation will come down, the economies are rebounding following the lifting of restrictions due to COVID-19. But the fact is that ordinary citizens right now are on their knees. I mean, you have record inflation, so that's the price of things have gone up. Energy costs are at the highest level that we've ever seen. You have the growing tensions with Russia, which also contributes to a lack of positive economic outlook in terms of businesses, you know, afraid to invest and so on. We're hearing about thousands of U.S. troops being sent to Eastern Europe, which is ramping up the sort of uncertainty, the overall uncertainty, which is impacting the Eurozone. I'm just reading a report right now, in fact, from published yesterday, Tuesday, here in Brussels, from a support group, a suicide prevention support group, and they had a record number of contacts last year contacting the helpline, 22,000, an increase of 20%. And so ordinary, most of those people are young people, because disproportionately impacted when we have these economic collapses are young people, young adults. We have millions of young adults who are out of work or who are afraid of losing their jobs due to precarious employment. If you look at the data from 2020, the Eurozone economy collapsed by 6.4%. That was the biggest collapse since the euro currency came into existence, and the biggest in the history of the EU. We've got a huge public debt mountain as well. We don't hear much about this, but you know, of course, governments, the 27 EU governments, they're getting a lot of grants because of a mechanism set up by the EU and the European Central Bank. But half of those, the money going there, the billions of euro, are loans. So loans have to be paid back. And when you have this massive government debt, public debt, it means that more austerity coming down the tracks for millions of EU citizens in the years to come. And we have the rise of populism. Experts have been telling us for years that the biggest threat to the EU project overall, we've had many different crises in the past, the 2008 economic crash. We've had the terrorism issue, we had the refugee crisis and so on. But actually the number one threat, according to the experts we've interviewed down through the years, is the lack of social inclusion, the inability of the EU governments to try and ensure social inclusion. And therefore that gives rise to populism, far-right, far-left political parties that are Eurosceptic, and it's a massive threat. But really, the bottom line here in all of this is the impact on ordinary citizens who are really feeling the pinch.
Thank you so much for that. Jerome Hughes there from Brussels. Many thanks. Moving on, COVID-19 infections hitting record highs in several European countries amid growing concerns over the fast-spreading Omicron variant. Germany logs more than 208,000 infections in one single day, pushing the total past 10 million mark. The Czech Republic also registers its highest daily tally with over 57,000 cases. Denmark is another European country with a daily average of around 50,000 infections. It's also the first country on the continent that has lifted COVID-related restrictions despite Omicron surge. Meanwhile, France also loosens several of the restrictions imposed to curb the COVID surge. The easing curbs, however, come despite an advisory by the World Health Organization that restrictions should be removed slowly and with caution. Rescue operations are underway in Quito, the capital of Ecuador, following record rainfall and landslides that have caused widespread destruction. At least 24 people are dead, 12 are missing, and nearly 50 others have been injured. Quito Mayor's office has set up shelters to help the affected families. People stuck in the mud, and the torrents of water sweeping away vehicles, trees, and utility poles. According to weather experts, Monday's torrential rains have been the heaviest to hit the South American country's capital in two decades. Severe downpours in Ecuador have been causing river outflows or overflows and similar incidents since October. Officials are now warning that the mudslides could further continue. And that does it for this edition of World News. Just stay with us. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The Islamic Revolution, which continues its inspirational awakening of the masses in the region and beyond, is an undeniable fact, as is evidenced by the positive developments in Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Palestine, Bahrain, Yemen, Afghanistan, Egypt, and Nigeria, to name a few countries. The astounding progress of Islamic Iran in science and technology, that is, medicine, stem cell therapy, the nuclear fuel cycle, aerospace, cyberspace, and artificial intelligence, and all other fields, including profound influence on social, cultural, intellectual, political, and economic events outside the borders of Iran, is proof of the far-sighted vision of Imam Khomeini. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Kayhan International staff writer. This article is published under the heading, A Revolution Was Burst of Light. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. We'll be right back. February 1st starts the 43rd 10-day dawn in the history of Iran. It means it is now as many years since that memorable day when that sage of the age landed in Tehran to an unprecedented welcome seen anywhere in the world to guide people towards victory of the Islamic Revolution and establishment of the Islamic Republic. Millions of Iranians thronged Mehrabad Airport this day in 1979 to catch a glimpse of the return from almost 15 years of exile of the iconoclast at whose impending arrival the British installed and U.S.-backed Shah had fled the country. No doubt, the enthusiastic masses in Iran sang in the streets via the radio and on the TV. The devil has fled at the approach of the angel. As the international media focused upon the charismatic personality of Sayyid Ruhollah Mousavi Khomeini, God bless his soul, expecting some sort of sensation, especially when the apparatus of the Pahlavi regime was apparently intact and thundering threats, the unguarded imam and his millions of unarmed followers neither dug trenches nor went for weapon arsenals. Straightway, he drove to the Behesht-e-Zahra cemetery, which was blooming with more and more new graves every day as the regime continued its killing spree on the orders of its masters in the U.S. He chose the resting place of the seemingly dead to address the apparently alive all over the world where consciences had long frozen, if not become lifeless. Every word he spoke has been diligently recorded and is punctually heard and screened every year and does not need to be repeated, including his emphasis on establishing the Islamic Republic system of government, his naming of the U.S., the Great Satan, and his promise of support to the oppressed people of Palestine. It is worth recalling that many of the self-acclaimed analysts and politicians around the world had chuckled at the words of the black turbaned and white-bearded religious scholar in his late 70s. They didn't give him much chance of survival, let alone success. They thought he was daydreaming. Most in the West were convinced that soon he would be taken care of by the Shah's U.S.-trained military or pushed into the sidelines by Western-educated and supposedly democratic-minded self-styled revolutionaries who were now pouring into Tehran from Paris, London, Bonn, New York, etc. to take over the country as one of those puppet republics. How utterly wrong they were. The analysts, the politicians, the experts, the Iran watchers, including of the so-called Third World, who saw developments in the world only through the stained glasses of either the capitalist in Washington or the communist in Moscow. No need to recount the spectacular developments of the past 43 years in Islamic Iran, which Imam Khomeini guided through the intensity of the devilish plots of the great Satan, including the eight-year war imposed through Saddam of the repressive Ba'ath minority regime of Baghdad. In retrospect, where are today's politicians, analysts, and experts in the West engrossed in the 4+1 talks in Vienna and the useless U.S. sanctions? Like it not, it is crystal clear that the Islamic Republic of Iran is the epitome of practical reality of a sovereign independent country that has defeated global arrogance. C. Similarly, the Islamic Revolution, which continues its inspirational awakening of the masses in the region and beyond, is an undeniable fact, as is evident by the positive developments in Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Palestine, Bahrain, Yemen, Afghanistan, Egypt, and Nigeria, to name a few countries. The astounding progress of Islamic Iran in science and technology, that is medicine, stem cell therapy, the nuclear fuel cycle, aerospace, cyberspace, and artificial intelligence, and all other fields, including profound influence on social, cultural, intellectual, political, and economic events outside the borders of Iran, is proof of the far-sighted vision of Imam Khomeini. He predicted the end of communism, and it is no more. He foretold the collapse of capitalism, and it is on its last legs in the West. He prophesied the weeding out of the cancerous tumor called Israel, and its death throes are evident for all, despite the desperate bid of the U.S. to prolong its survival through the much-publicized open alliances with the equally precarious Arab regimes. Thus, in a last-ditch effort that speaks of sheer frustration and intellectual bankruptcy of the U.S., its devilish minions, after their utter failure in turning Syria and Iraq into Takfiristan through the most macabrely murderous terrorists, have resorted to state terrorism in Yemen in a hopeless bid to try to undermine the wave of awakening set in motion by the Islamic Revolution. Soon, this will also end in failure. And, as stressed by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, who continues to ably guide Iran, inshallah, God willing, the current second 40-year phase of the Islamic Revolution will see more victories, watered by the sacred blood of the martyrs General Qasem Soleimani and Dr. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, as well as those in Mesopotamia, Levant, the Arabian Peninsula, the Caucasus, Central Asia, the subcontinent, Africa, and other places, as the world eagerly awaits the promised new order of the global government of justice to be established by the savior of mankind, the awaited Imam Mahdi. May God hasten his reappearance. Didn't the late Imam Khomeini say, "Our revolution was a burst of light"? Bazaar.
What it feels like to be sick. You feel sluggish, fatigued, or lose your appetite, and perhaps become more sensitive to pain and cold. Many times, people can treat themselves at home with self-care and homemade remedies. Other times, a trip to the doctor does the trick. But even then, some ailments require more advanced interventions for diagnosis and therapies provided by hospitals. This is where medical devices come in handy. The health sector is mainly dependent on the accuracy and zero failure of advanced medical technology to get the job done.
Hello everyone, I'm Sarah Adema and welcome to another edition of Bozor. This time, we're going to take you through Ebon's high-tech medical device productions. We wanted to see who the big players in this specialized market are and check out their activities in the medical health sector. Plus, we wanted to see why this market continues to burgeon and uncover how scientific advancements are contributing to the national economy. Let's start the show.
Our quest for answers led us on a journey to the Science and Research Park of Isfahan, where we visited Behyar Sanat Sepahan. It was first established over two decades ago, and now manufactures over 80 types of high-tech medical equipment and products. Its products cover a range of medical devices like hospital furniture, surgical tables, and lighting systems. But its main claim to fame is its advanced nuclear technology, such as the medical linear accelerator. This machine is commonly used for radiation treatments for cancer patients by delivering high-energy X-rays or electrons to the region of a patient's tumor. It's worth mentioning that this device costs roughly $3 to $4 million in foreign markets. This company can manufacture the linear accelerator at a third of this price. Plus, 90% of the device components are homegrown in Isfahan province. This company also makes other types of nuclear medical technology, such as the U-arm and ceiling-mounted radiation therapy equipment. But that's not all. They manufacture security and inspection systems used in airports, such as X-ray machines and handheld metal detectors as well. Developing indigenous technology of its kind has saved the country millions of dollars on imports and has benefited many patients so far.
It might be interesting to know that the technology for creating radiation therapy devices has been generally monopolized by the United States, Britain, and China. Iran is the fourth country in the world to be able to domestically manufacture such complex and sensitive nuclear technology. And this is all thanks to massive advancements in Iran's research and academic circles.
The beating heart of this company is its research and development department. This knowledge-based firm employs over 500 engineers and specialists, such as medical physicists, oncologists, and dosimetrists, among others. This firm also collaborates with the National Atomic Energy Organization, the Vice Presidential Office for Science and Technology, Ministry of Health, and Isfahan University of Medical Sciences. Dependability and accuracy of its products are key components in delivering high-quality performance. As such, this knowledge-based manufacturer makes its products along international guidelines for quality and safety. It has received its certifications and production permits from the Ministry of Health and Medical Education and National Medical Device Directorate, among many more. As part of its future vision, this firm is eyeing neighboring markets for exports, which are currently facing high demands for linear accelerators. Their ultimate goal is to elevate the quality of lives of people through creating technology that treats ill patients. The products of this company are vital for the treatment of cancer. Due to the cruel sanctions, many restrictions have been placed on Iran's purchase and imports of this equipment and its supporting services. This knowledge-based firm sees the sanctions as an opportunity for growth and advancing scientific knowledge inside the country.
Now, medical devices are considered a fundamental component of the healthcare system, and their benefits continue to increase with the advancements of scientific discovery. Iran is globally ranked fourth in the engineering of 1,000 of medical devices, and this sector is thriving in the country. But you don't have to take my word for it. Let's check out some statistics and figures in this field. Domestic medical device production has grown by 213% since 2019, reducing imports by 10% in the same period. Plus, exports of medical devices are up by 10% this year. Over 2,000 different types of medical devices and supplies are domestically produced under the license of the Ministry of Health based on EU standards. That's all based on figures from the Medical Equipment Office at the Ministry of Health. Based on the Medical Device Directorate, there are roughly 1,000 medical device manufacturers nationwide. These companies provide 30% of revenues in the domestic medical device market. The directorate also says export revenues were well over $24 million this year, but the goal is to generate nearly $1 billion in revenues in the coming years. These statistics have been largely credited to governmental support for the development of knowledge and research companies. Several policies have been implemented over the years to help in businesses in their efforts to create new products and increase their exports. The Ministry of Science, Research and Technology recently launched a focus plan to help companies with international standardizations. This program assesses the compatibility of the Iranian knowledge-based products with global markets under the World Trade Organization standards. The plan aims to attract foreign investments. Government officials and industry participants say it's a significant step towards keeping high-tech medical devices and products relevant in the international arena. Iran exports its medical devices and products to numerous countries across the globe. But scores of people from abroad also visit Iran to benefit from the cutting-edge technologies and the excellent medical service. This is called medical tourism. The National Center for Developing Health Tourism says Iran has the potential to earn $7 billion annually from this sector. These days, medical tourism is considered a booming industry as some 24 million patients travel for medical treatments around the globe every year. Patients Without Borders Publishing Group puts the global value at around $90 billion. And Iran is a major destination for health tourism in the region because of the rapid investment in healthcare infrastructure in order to satisfy surging demands. Iran's two popular medical tourist destinations are Tehran and Mashhad. Other popular destinations include the city of Shiraz and Isfahan, but the coronavirus outbreak has significantly reduced the number of travelers. Industry participants say medical tourism is a win-win opportunity both for the country and foreign patients. This is because Iran offers affordable and quality treatment services. While many visit the country for cosmetic surgery, Iran is also known for its organ transplants, heart and neurosurgeons, among other life-saving medical treatments. The government has set goals to increase annual medical travelers to around 2 million over the next 4 years. Before the coronavirus pandemic hit, Iran hosted a record-breaking 600,000 medical travelers in 2019. That's according to the Medical Tourism Department at the Ministry of Health. The ministry says these tourists generated over $1 billion in foreign currency. Simply put, wheat is part of the grass family. Some have argued that wheat domesticated mankind, bringing humans away from the colorful and adventurous hunter-gatherer lifestyle and settling them permanently next to their fields. It is also said that wheat is responsible for the agricultural revolution. It has supplied the calories that made it possible for the world's population to race toward 8 billion people. Presently, wheat is grown on more land areas across the world than any other food crop. This week, we will venture through the vast agriculture industry. We wanted to see how its products are linked to the booming food sector and uncover why it is so important to the economy. So let's get started. Our quest for answers took us to Jor-A Company. It was established nearly four decades ago and specializes in producing flour. This flour mill has massive production halls which houses the latest machinery used in this business. Everything coming out of the flour mill is inside each grain of wheat and none of it is wasted. Anything that is not used for human consumption is used for animal feed. It all starts with the wheat that is brought to the mill. Wheat that enters the facilities is sampled and tested before anything else is done. It is analyzed for moisture, gluten, and other characteristics. If it meets the standards, then it is taken to be stored. The miller's job is to separate the grain into different parts. Inside each grain is flour, bran, and germ. This is a gradual process that involves lots of sieving and sifting using giant machines in a closed-circuit process. The second stage, after crushing wheat into coarse fragments, is to add moisture, and it is stored in a separate area for 12 hours. This stage prepares the wheat for further sifting to separate bran and fine flour and is tested again for particular characteristics. Now it is ready for the final grinding phase, where it will be sifted some more. Back in the day, these processes used to be done by stone presses, and it was much faster. It might have taken 10 minutes to make stone grout flour. But with modern mills, the grinding process might take over an hour to complete. Different components of wheat are separated and later recombined to make different blends of flour, which might include bran as well. The final product is either white and bran or whole meal flour. At this stage, it is finally ready for packaging and distribution. Over the years, this company has expanded its production such that now it produces 12 times more flour on a daily basis compared to when it started out. The production line uses state-of-the-art machinery that has been imported from Germany and Italy to get the job done. An important aspect of quality production is the different types of massive storage silos, as well as the raw material this company uses. Having a clear vision for production is also key in maintaining quality, but that's easier said than done. This company believes that having a bright plan for the future and an outline of steps to execute such a plan is critical to a smooth mass production. The mill produces flour along the lines of exports and adheres to national and international standards for production, safety, and quality. Producing the highest quality of products to satisfy its customers is, of course, its main priority. This company has overcome numerous obstacles in order to enjoy its many achievements over the years. One such a hurdle in its journey has been the U.S.-imposed economic sanctions, which has hindered many exporting processes for the businesses. Now, a lot of work and effort goes into farming wheat. The right location, soil conditions, seeds, germination, water, and so much more all make up the ingredients for a good harvest. Over the years, the government has implemented several plans and schemes to help support farmers and wheat productions nationwide. So at the present time, how is the wheat production like in the country? Around 6 million hectares of land across the country are used for farming. That is a 2.5 million hectare increase in land area used to plant crops compared to previous years. About a third of wheat fields in Iran are irrigated and the rest is rain-fed, which makes these crops vulnerable to rainfall variation. That's all according to the National Foundation of Wheat Growers. In March 2020, the government announced a scheme to purchase nearly 75% of domestic wheat productions at guaranteed prices. The goal was to reduce reliance on imports for domestic consumption. However, farmers thought that the government purchased wheat brought them little profit.
As a result, some farmers opted to sell their wheat for animal feed at a higher price instead. So the government increased its purchase price to make up for the deficits. Wheat production has witnessed many ups and downs over the years. This year, farmers are dealing with droughts and pests such as locusts, as well as an increase in the cost of fertilizers and seeds. Consequently, there has been a 30% decrease in wheat harvest this year. In order to remedy the situation, the government has granted permission to import wheat and increase the production of seeds as well. Wheat is believed to be an inseparable part of our everyday food, as it can be used for various meals like pasta, bread, cookies, and so much more. It's considered a strategic crop because it can be transformed into different products with added value, which increases profits. In the world today, the food industry is worth billions and is growing at a rapid pace. As you probably know, the national food production is heavily dependent on productions in the agriculture industry. The food industry is the biggest contributor to the national economy. Going off the figures from Iran's Customs Administration, this sector makes up over 20% of Iran's non-oil revenues. This industry is almost entirely privately owned too, and for those who want to enter this sector, it offers a world of opportunities. The food sector also holds the largest share in creating jobs in the country and accounting for around 50% of the country's entire industrial employment. That's according to the Ministry of Industries, Mining and Trade. Over 5 million tons of agricultural and food products were exported from Iran in the first 8 months of this year. Based on data from the Ministry of Agriculture, these exports raked in roughly $3.3 billion. It might be interesting to know pistachios topped the exporting charts in terms of value. Dairy products, sweets, poultry, and aquaculture, as well as a diverse range of agricultural products, are some of the main items exported this year. Iran exports these items to numerous market destinations across the world, including countries in Europe, Asia, and South America. All right, everyone, it's time for me to take you out on the field to walk you through the production procedure of a material that we use on a day-to-day basis. I won't tell you any further. Let's begin the adventure. One of the major innovations of the past centuries has been the introduction and wide adaptation of plastics for many day-to-day applications. The mass use of plastic started in the 1950s and has steadily grown ever since. Today, more than 300 million tons of plastic are produced worldwide every year. The popularity of plastic is due not only to its low production costs, but also its numerous practical characteristics, including its low weight, acid resistance, and flexibility. There is so much more that can be said about this industry, but now it's time for me to pass it over to my dear colleague out on the field for an exciting adventure.
Traditional medicine or modern medicine? This is among the most frequently asked questions. At the end of this episode, you'll definitely get to an answer to this question, as we're going to walk you through an Iranian pharmaceutical manufacturer dubbed Bouali Darul, which produces a range of traditional medicine. While traditional medicine uses traditional therapeutic methods, Bouali Darul says it constantly conducts research and development to come up with new medications and boost the effectiveness of its medicines. Practitioners of traditional medication say one of the proven advantages of herbal medicine is their zero side effect aspect. Bouali Darul says their drugs are produced purely from herbs and will not lead to any serious side effects.
Iranian pharmaceutical firm says it's yet to reach its full capacity in the production of traditional medicine. It says it seeks to produce more drugs for more diseases, and at the same time, it aims to present its products in the global market. Bouali Daroud takes his name from renowned 10th century Iranian physician Avicenna, who is hailed internationally as the pioneer of traditional medication. Bouali Daroud says it works on an hourly basis to improve the quality of its products, with the ultimate goal of promoting the acceptance of traditional medicine among the public.
For our final portion of the program, let's take a brief look at a few interesting bits of news and trends in the medical industry. Ever wanted to go for a run, but felt that it was just too tiresome? Well, a group of Iranian researchers have invented a wearable device that helps people run or walk long distances with less pain or tiredness. The device is a lightweight harness worn around the waist and legs with localized springs. The embedded spring stores some energy consumed during activity and later transfers it to the legs without the use of an engine or battery. The developers say it has the ability to increase running efficiency by 8%, making running feel much easier. Recently, there have been numerous developments in Iran's healthcare systems. One trend we've been seeing in the last couple of years is the rise in electronic health services that was spurred by the coronavirus pandemic. Several online platforms have been developed over the past 2 years. These platforms offer non-emergency online doctor visits, counseling, and therapy. Generally, there has been many positive outcomes arising from the mass use of digital health tools during the pandemic. Online care helped relieve the system from great pressure. Iranian medical companies are constantly creating new products streamlined into the market. An Iranian biotechnology company is taking steps towards producing a kit for diagnosing congenital and genetic disorders. The kit analyzes 26 sites of repetitive short sequences of the genome from embryonic samples. It performs rapid prenatal diagnosis of chromosomal disorders, including Down syndrome, Turner syndrome, and Edwards syndrome, just to name a few. The developers say the kit is more accurate and can detect more disorders than its foreign counterparts. Finally, that covers our program for today. Let us know what you think by sharing your thoughts via email. Thank you for tuning in. Stay safe and bye-bye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters. 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAT 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastorday.com/en. And now, you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.